Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, August 16th, 2000. What year is it? I'm not sure. Maybe we'll just call it an EO year. We'll call it an 8 for good riddance, but I don't know what year it really is anymore. Tonight we're going to have Steve Barish on. We're going to be continuing on with our discussions on Planet X and other things, of course. We've talked to Leonard Susskind recently about Planet X. He's the Felix Bloch professor up at Stanford University, one of the most powerful theoretical physicists in the West Coast. And he's into talking about it. And also we're going to have Dr. Michael Brooks on fairly soon, who has the same publisher as Michio Kaku. And he's got a book coming out on, it's just being released as we speak. And one of the things he covers is testing. He's also a theoretical physicist, and also I think he's into medicine. And one of the things he covers is the effect of a placebo. Oftentimes in a double-blind study, when they have a placebo effect on the people being tested, they get a result that's positive, as though they have the substance or part of the substance. And this he explains, is a form of a quantum entanglement, which is an actual transference of energy from the people in the control group to the placebo group. So we got some interesting things starting to develop from some very famous people to back up what Steve and I do. And speaking of Steve, I think Steve Barish is on tonight. Are you there, Steve?
Yeah, man, right here.
Cool. How's everything going back there in Rochester?
Real good, real good. I just parked my Cobra, so I'm here.
Wow! I had my little sports car out yesterday. I get to have enough time to take it out about once a week if I'm lucky, you know.
Well, you're busy working on your new book.
Well, right now, yeah, I'm working on my new book, and I'm doing some more research on it, and I've been repairing. I had a few things I had to clear out of here before I could actually focus. And one of those things was the these televisions that I was restoring. I had a friend of mine that was. I was going to send him up in business. His name was Steve, and then he took off to the other plane, left me with a bunch of these what I call Philco predicted television sets, which are the worst, absolute gnarliest televisions on the planet. They're about 60 years old to work on.
Mm.
And I got them all three running. I got one ready to assemble and two more to just do some minor work on. Then I'm going to put them all on eBay, and then I'll have the decks cleared 100% and do my book.
Yeah.
Just had the karma of a few things that I had done with my other helper out here before he left me.
Right.
So anyhow, what's been going on back in the bearish world?
Well, I've been doing a lot of reading in Rays of Truth and Crystals of Light. And, you know, it's really amazing. We were talking about that yesterday, and there's so much knowledge in this book. I, for anybody else, it would take 300 years to print this book, but you did it in a short period of time.
Which book is that?
Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light.
Oh, yeah, you started reading it finally.
Yes, finally.
Did you actually have to take, is it true there was a rumor that you had to go to school to learn how to read?
You got that right.
Yeah, and then you could read the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I'm finding out is how we've actually started really ruining our planet.
Yeah, that's what we, yeah. Where'd you figure that out from?
Well, of course, we've talked about that many times, but the information in this book, and I'm saying it for everybody because I think everybody should really buy this book and read it. It's unbelievable.
What's the name of this book?
It's called Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light.
Wow. So you
by Dr. Fred
that,
Bell.
Right? That's funny.
And I'm reading part of it that seems to be very serious, and I guess the Global Report documents that the ocean, the first 75 feet of the ocean is quite interesting because that makes a lot of the oxygen for the planet.
Yeah, about 60%.
Yeah, about 60% of it. The other 40 is from plants and forests. But
right.
I guess what really is amazing is that the ocean liners and anything that's on the ocean that we're using, any kind of material that's put in the ocean is actually killing the oxygen.
Yeah.
So there's such a shortage, and I guess we're stripping the forests by an area the size of California every year.
Yeah, it's a pretty large area, and then we're making desert or non-growable land about the size of the state of I think Maine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was back in the Global 2000 report. It's probably more now.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that the loss of life. I mean, the loss of animals and insects on the planet is just. I guess it's a mass extinction. It's just absolutely amazing that the Global Report reveals that in 1981 we lost 2 million species of birds and animals. And
yeah,
insects.
Yeah, in Hawaii, there's only 7 or 8 rare species left. They lost like 68 species of rare birds over there in the last 15 years. Really beautiful birds.
Yeah.
It's sad to see some of those go, especially those big white ones. I forget what they were called.
Yeah. So it's just amazing that we're not doing anything to help the Earth. I mean, a few of us are, but it's just amazing that we're not doing more.
I know. People are not aware of what's going on yet.
Well, the depletion of everything that's happening with us, the higher carbon dioxide levels means the depletion of oxygen, and it's affecting all of us.
Yeah. Well, the oxygen levels are dropping, and as
rapidly.
A result, people are turning more and more to drugs.
Yes.
And, natural and prescription drugs.
Right, right, right.
You know, I was just watching a special on the History Channel before this show about how they criminalized marijuana when, in fact, there was really nothing wrong with that one as a relaxing agent.
Mm-hmm.
They picked on different towns. They tried to make make everybody afraid of it where they wouldn't touch it. It was a devil weed. So Mayor LaGuardia, back when he was mayor of New York back in the early 20s, ran a study on it, and he actually got his pot from the agency in the government that was at the time, making it illegal.
Right.
And even to get the law through, they had to run a law through on getting a permit for a machine gun. So, and using that standard, getting a permit to smoke marijuana and then limiting the permit,
mm-hmm.
so only a few people could get medical marijuana back in the 20s. But
right,
even
right.
What Mary LaGuardia found out was that there were, in his town in New York,
mm-hmm.
when they run this test, the marijuana didn't do anything harmful to anybody.
Yeah.
And, of course, before they made it illegal, everybody was smoking it because, the alcohol had been taken off. Prohibition was here.
Yeah.
So you begin to see how all through this country, its history pretty much from the turn of the century, the 19th century.
Well, what's really...
That it's all controlled by politics.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. You know, what's really interesting is hemp can be used instead of gasoline.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yep.
Hemp is, as we've discussed before, Henry Ford used it. He had 18 acres of it, ran all his cars on it.
Mm-hmm.
He hated the petroleum industry.
Right, right, right.
So it was kind of sad. And I was the one that suggested in Canada, on my shows back when I was doing a lot of the Art Bell shows and George Norrie
mm-hmm.
shows,
mm-hmm.
that we need to, I kept pushing hemp on coast to coast because it's got a good audience.
Right,
a Canadian.
Right, right.
So now they're making it out of hemp up there, but it's much more efficient green-wise to make it from, hemp rather than corn. Corn, it actually takes more energy to produce that, so it's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't hear that brought up. But remember, hemp was our largest product at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
All lamps lit were on hemp oil.
Well, it's amazing because the hemp clothes are really good, too. I mean, they're starting to come through with T-shirts and clothes and different things of that nature. Now I see it more in my health food store. That they're using hemp, which is really great.
Yeah, no, that's, hemp clothes are good. They're not toxic.
Right, right. I bought a new book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survivor Guide by Jocko van der Werp.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting, Fred. Maybe some people need to know the background of Planet X. It's actually known as Nibiru.
Right.
and that is the Sumerian word for planet of the crossing. And it was discovered by the Sumerians, believe it or not, 6,000 years ago.
Right.
And how they discovered it was absolutely amazing. They were visited by people from Nibiru. Very, very interesting. There were 12 gods that they called gods when they came to the earth from Nibiru. And they do have... I guess that it's really amazing because we have, or we found 5,000 cylindrical seals that discuss their life, and some of it discusses Nibiru.
Right.
And I guess what happened was is that I don't know how they found out, but they knew all about the planets. I mean, they knew every planet that we had. And it's really amazing when you think about it. This was like thousands of years ago, 6,000 years ago, and it's just amazing that that we're just now looking into it and finding out that all their information is very true.
Yeah, it's you know I'm writing a lot about this in my new book, but I just started. I started about 500 BC with Thales.
Okay,
and he was like the first guy to really come out of the ground with some science.
Right.
He was the one that determined the height of the pyramid just by the casting of a shadow, and he also predicted an eclipse, which then stopped a Greek war, which made him pretty famous.
Right.
He didn't tell him it was an eclipse. He just told him that if they didn't stop this war, that it was going to get dark for a day. It freaked them all out, you know.
Gotcha.
So that's gotcha. How the science kind of started. And from him, Leucippus was another one, and it just keeps going on and on and on. It was real interesting, too, because... Mm-hmm. In the book, Ray's Inside Track book, we're working on.
Yeah.
It's real interesting to see the personalities of these people and what their personal belief systems were. And before Thales, people really didn't think a whole lot. You know, then Copernicus came along without a telescope, began to make, you know, a lot of different, you know, observations. And telescope didn't come along much before the birth of Christ. They were just starting to figure out lenses and stuff, you know.
Yes.
It was just right around his time that the first telescopes were, and they were very crude.
Right.
It was very interesting.
Well, there, I guess what we're doing now, NASA has got quite a planetary, and they're using a scope, I believe, in the southern hemisphere that has... Quite a visual sighting of Planet X.
Yeah, now there's a telescope, it's an infrared telescope sitting down in the Antarctica.
Right.
Set up. Now,
right.
What I've been trying to do is break the veil of what the what's really happened on the you know, the classification of the existence of this, you know, of the particular satellite, I mean the brown dwarf. And that's how I presented it to Leonard Susskind the other night.
Uh-huh.
So I sent him an email. I didn't actually talk to him this time about what he would, because he's working on, him and Stephen Hawking had a big long battle for a long time about evaporation, black holes, and of course, you know, Hawking said that the black hole collapsed into Hawking radiation and everything is lost. And Susskind thought that everything couldn't be lost because in physics this would be a terrible thing because energy cannot be created or destroyed.
Right.
So it was a violation of physics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he wrote a book called The Black Hole Wars, and when he comes on he's going to be talking about that. So with that in mind, why not brown dwarfs? I mean, brown dwarf seems to me that's what this Jupiter-sized Planet X is supposed to be. Let's start going into the scientific community and looking at brown dwarfs.
Yeah, I think the Earth, actually the Sun has a brown dwarf.
No, our Sun is a G4 star.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
A brown dwarf is a star that never ignited.
Okay.
So as a result of it not igniting, it was like a Jupiter-sized planet.
That's big.
Yeah. And so what happens is, as it comes closer to the Earth in its 3,600-mile orbit, it creates a gravity, conflict of our gravity. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to say that some of these higher, you know, these tides, you know, all this kind of stuff is caused somewhat by that. But so far, it's still out by the orbit of Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's out there, it would have a heat signature, and you wouldn't. It's a dark planet. It won't reflect any light because it's too far out. It has a heat signature.
Okay.
So what happened is that NASA built the Zyras satellite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when the supposedly about 10 years ago, it detected this period, supposedly Planet X, by the fact that this Jupiter-sized dark planet orbiting our sun,
mm-hmm.
that was hot in the center. They could determine there was heat in it. So that's kind of how it all started. That's where I got involved. And then the people, you know, and then they want to, you know, NASA, of course, means never a straight answer.
Right, right.
So with NASA being never a straight answer, as far as what we've gotten out of these IRAS satellites, we don't know yet. You know?
Well,
I don't know anyway.
I'm trying
to find out. I hear everything.
Yeah, this Planet X book that I have is very interesting. It talks about basically our entire solar system is being infected by Planet X now. Evidently, the Earth, of course, we have global warming here, and Mars, it's having global warming also, and they just found out the disappearance of polar ice caps on Mars. And everything from Jupiter to Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, they're all being affected by the planets. So something big is going to happen. And when I bought this book, I wanted to find out what happened in 2012. Well, 2012, the planet we'll be able to see the planet with the naked eye in mid 2009.
That's the Planet X.
Right. And they said that when in 2012, when Planet X gets next to the sun or comes into the sun, I guess we're going to see a lot of electrical storms like we've never seen before in our lives.
Oh, yeah, that has to do with the starting out of the ionosphere. It will be greatly affected where we have what's called skip.
Right.
Where the ham radio operators work at a certain time in the evening system. Get around the world.
Right.
They can't
right.
do it during the day because the solar radiation is too great.
Yes. And I guess the apex of it, Planet X next to Mother Earth, we're going to feel the effects of it for quite some time, but the worst year will be 2013.
Yeah.
And after that, it'll start dissipating by the year 2014. So there's a lot happening out there. It's just quite amazing.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Did you hear the caller? Was there a caller or not? I couldn't tell.
No, it didn't sound like it to me.
Okay.
No, it didn't sound like it was a caller.
All right. So anyway, yeah, this is happening. But then I'm doing some. You know, I'm working on the X1 project
yes.
now too, and so I'm starting to look at how far science has come into letting people understand the effects of, you know, the science is the effects of. Everything from ionospheric radiation, ELF waves that are, not non-natural causes,
right.
all the microwave radiation. We used to have a very quiet microwave environment. Now we have a horrible environment on this world.
Right.
All the effects of the, different planetary gravitational pulling forces on the surface tension of the cells. So I've been studying, doing some research on where science is today.
Mm-hmm.
With this information, exactly what the database is, because back when I started talking about it, there wasn't any database. The only thing that was available is what I was saying. And a few people like Pat Flanagan and I were doing some surface tension work.
Mm-hmm.
A few universities had done a little bit of work, but nothing much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's more information out there. We're also looking at the effects of where you sleep at night, because in some places, if there's water, for example, underground water rivers or water sources of water mm-hmm. running into each other, it produces an interference wave that has a very bad what's called geophysical effect on the body,
mm-hmm.
and it can cause people to gradually go insane. Just that, those fields that are created.
Gotcha.
And this Planet X is going to amplify that quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, that's why we have, you know, that's why we started developing all these holographic and radionic scalar wave devices, the Paradigm 30-some years ago, because we could see this coming.
Right. Well, it's amazing because I'm sleeping under the pyramid that I got, and I'm noticing such big differences between that. I'm getting better sleep. I feel better in the morning when I wake up. It just hello.
Yeah, now we have a caller.
Yeah,
this is Scott. I was hearing your discussion on Planet X, and I was wondering if the book you're reading on Planet X has anything to do with, or it goes into detail rather. As to the life forms that might be inhabiting Planet X right now, and so on and so forth.
Where I learn more about the inhabitants of people. Let me turn this back on the computer. I'll give you the site. Let's see here. It's called xfax.com, XHTM. You might want to tune that and see how that looks. So there's a lot of information on there that'll give you any kind of information on life forms, and it's quite interesting.
Okay.
That's what you need to look up, Sumerian Planet X. It'll give you a tremendous information.
Thank you.
Okay.
Where are you calling from, Sean?
Calling from Daytona Beach, Florida.
Oh, cool. How's the weather down there today? Is it hot and sticky?
Well, actually, we've had some damp days. It's been rainy yesterday, and today wasn't nearly as bad. I've had the windows open. I'm on the beach here, and I've had the windows open all day, and it's been about 82 degrees, I guess, inside.
So how's your weather pattern down there changing? Has it changed much in the last 5 years?
Well, fortunately, this summer we've gotten our normal pattern back, and normal pattern means there'll be a rainstorm sometime in the afternoon around, well, sometime in between noon, say, and 4 or 5 in the afternoon, which cools things off. But there have been, as you probably heard from the news, about 8 years ago, we had the problem with the fires, and then 3 years ago or 2 years ago, we had problems with fires, and that was something new for Florida, but, I'm grateful that we have moisture again. I use crystal grids myself to try to bring rain. There are a few in Melody's crystal grid books that she suggests for people who have crystals to put down like a Neptune grid and that sort of thing to bring rain. So I do that, and I found that her grids are helpful in attracting certain weather patterns that are more desirable than fire. I've also used maps. Like I'll put down like a USA map. If like, for example, back a month ago when California was having all the problem there with the fires and the drought, I included California and other parts of America, the West, all the way over to Colorado. And I don't know if it helped out there, but I noticed that it has helped here in terms of bringing the rain back.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I know that we used to use the irradiators for weather control. And we were able to produce some nice lightning storms with them. And I know that Lockheed Skunk Works down in Huntsville. Was it Huntsville? I think it was Huntsville was playing around with them. And they were used to call me on them. So, yeah, the radionic stuff works great for seeding clouds and making rain. How are the wetlands in Florida? Are they coming back? Because I know you guys were losing them when you had all those fires.
Yes, that's been a problem, as well as the Ocala Forest. Them building houses out there, that's like our main forest in Florida, and they were developing the land out there, and the bears don't have any place to go. And just a few weeks ago, there was a wounded bear behind Walmart in Ormond Beach, which is right next to where I live here, and it was hanging out there, probably struck by an automobile, but the animals don't have anywhere to go. The bears don't have any place to migrate. They were migrating between forests, and now there's one less forest, and it's not, that area, Ocala, is starting to build up, and there's not leaving any land for the animals.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know you had bears down there.
I didn't really either until about 2 years ago. I was on my way to a Lazarus workshop in Orlando, and I was listening to NPR, and they were doing a special on bears and wildlife in Florida and the ones we were losing, and that they had nowhere to go.
Yeah, we have the same problem here in Rochester, New York. In Fairport, New York, we're seeing bears, black bears. So this is
really, they're starting to come out.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the Bigfoot always, you know, there's some things going on that's bringing the animals into civilization. Yesterday I had a really nice snake come visit me here in my backyard, and it's called a California gloss snake. It's about 4.5 feet long. It's probably the friendliest wild snake. This thing was like reminding me of one of my birds. It was very friendly. I had some fun with it, played a little bit, and then I let it crawled off. I kind of felt worried that something would happen to it, but it's obviously, you know, in the wild, and in we do have rattlesnakes in the hills out here, but they never come in because they don't like people. So this thing is, I looked it up later on the computer and the internet, and it was an endangered species snake. You're supposed to report it if you see one of these. I don't know where to report it to, but I did see one. It was fun. It was playful and it was friendly. The other thing that was interesting is, you know, before when these Bigfoots would die, they would always haul them off. You know, they're Bigfoots. Well, I guess what happened here is on TV on Fox News today. A Bigfoot had been found that had recently was deceased, and they had his picture all over the news today. So there's something going on. Even the Bigfoot is which is a very sensitive creature, it's even being, coming out into the public somehow. So lots going on in the animal kingdom.
And one word I'd like to say on radionics is that it really does work. I had a friend with a radionics, one of the machines, and I'd send him a hair sample, and I was about to come down with the flu, and right when he activated it, I could feel, and he was up in Lebanon, New Jersey, I could feel the effects of the radionics working on, you know, healing, as well as I had a terrible toothache, and he helped with that also. It just, the pain went away.
That's cool.
Yeah,
are you using any of our projectors in that?
I don't know what machines. He ordered them from England.
I'm saying, are you using any of the Pyridine radionic stuff?
No, I don't know of their stuff. Is that, maybe you can educate me.
Yeah, Steve, tell them about what we do.
Yes, we have, I've got four projectors. They're holographic projectors. They're about 9 inches high and about 4 inches wide. And you can actually do anything you want with those projectors. I mean, it'll stop stuff dead in its tracks.
Wow.
Absolutely. It's all holographic. The universe is holographic. And what you need to do is look on Dr. Fred Bell on the Pyridine line.
Okay.
You'll be able to
type it in the search engine, yeah.
You'll be able to see the holographic projectors. You'll be able to see the nuclear receptors that he has. And this stuff really, really works. And I think you'll be amazed at it. You'll really, really be amazed. So you might want to take on his line or take a look at it and see. And it's absolutely amazing stuff.
Thank you.
I'll do that.
All right. Well, glad you called in and shared with us a little bit. That was nice.
Sure. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Quite welcome.
Bye.
You've been working on the X1 too, haven't you?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, we want to get out there to, we're going to get a place over there in Temecula. We've been looking at some property to build it, you know?
Yeah.
We've got people that are getting ready to make it happen, and a large company that's going to be distributing them. We're using the core of their machine for the X1.
Mm-hmm.
We've already made a deal. We got a deal memo done now.
Beautiful.
So we can talk about it. The company's called StarTech.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out of Utah. And they're in the business they're in of supplying energy and measuring meridian energy off
mm-hmm.
the body.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty much leaders in the field, and they produce a machine, I guess it sells in the $30,000 range, and they're
mm-hmm.
selling them all over the world like crazy.
Wow.
So what we're going to do is take that, and we're going to quantify it to what we do, which will bring it up a huge level from what they're doing to what we're going to do to it with our own designs that we're going to add to it.
That'll be amazing.
It'll be quantum. I'd like to talk about it, but it's... Right now, it's proprietary,
sure,
the actual
sure.
operation of the machine. But we'll be offering the X1 probably, hopefully by this time next year, we'll have a few available.
Beautiful.
Right now. So now you're getting into, you're waiting for, oh, I was going to read one thing. I was going to, this is a satellite. I was going to read this real quick from NASA, Never a Straight Answer.
Mm-hmm.
What an IRAS is, which means Infrared Astronomical Satellite. I'm just going to read this real briefly. And if you have any questions, I'll answer them about the technical part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Infrared Astronomical Satellite mission was a collaborative effort by the United States, the Netherlands, NIVR, and the United Kingdom, SERC, that's their NASA. IRAS contained a liquid helium-cooled 0.6-meter Ritchey Creighton telescope. And now when they start doing that, they're starting to use what we call SQUID devices, which are Josephine junction devices, which measure slight electron and photon changes at cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it conducted an all sky survey at wavelengths ranging from 8 to 120 microns, which that's infrared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which in four just slightly higher than our red lasers that we see, so you know
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
At about to about 2 feet at 100 microns, some 25,000 point sources were detected down to a limiting flux density away from the confused regions of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Of about of the sky of about 0.5 JY at 12, 25, and 60 microns, and about 1.5 JY at 100 microns. A catalog of small, less than 8-inch extended sources gives the characteristics of some 20,000 objects down to flux density levels to a factor of 3 brighter than the point source detection limit.
Mm-hmm.
An atlas of images covering the entire sky gives the absolute surface brightness of each of the 4 survey wavelengths. The positional accuracy of sources detected by IRAS depends on their size, brightness, and spectral energy distribution, but is usually better than 20 minutes. That's the detection across the sky. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you do minutes. You know, when you look at the latitude longitude measurements for all the sky surveys. For the all sky survey, the satellite scanned 3.85 degrees per second along arcs of constant solar elongation close to 90 degrees. IRAS has also made pointed observations of selected objects with integration times lasting up to 12 minutes, providing up to the factor of 10 increase in sensitivity relative to that of the survey. In addition to the main survey instrument and 2 other instruments, a low-resolution spectrometer, LRS, and a CHOPS photometric channel, CPC, were co-located with the photometric detector array in the focal plane. The LRS provided 8 to 22 micron spectra of approximately 5,000 survey sources brighter than 10 JY at 12 to 25 microns. The CPC made 50 and 100 micron maps by scanning in raster fashion. That's like the old TV sets when the picture wasn't on, you see a raster.
Mm-hmm.
With a circular of 1.2 degrees diameter aperture. However, the detector behaved anomalously and yielded data of lower quality than expected. Following a 10-month-long mission, IRAS exhausted its cryogen and ceased operations on November 21, 1983, meaning it lost its coolant so it could no longer, the Josephine junctions could no longer function.
Mm.
Yeah, it probably lasted 10 months. I don't know why they didn't use the cold temperature of space to continue that.
Hmm.
I imagine the newer technologies, they could do that. And we see between 300 and, let's see, what is it, 300 and 700 angstroms is what we see. You know, that's the normal visual frequency response of the eyes, unless, of course, you are meditating and doing other things, in which case you can expand that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they're running up in the higher angstrom range, actually the longer wavelength of red.
Mm-hmm.
Red is a long wavelength, ultraviolet's a short wavelength. When we
yeah.
get down, we have measured in lasers, a red would be in the 600 nanometer region. We call it nanometers.
Mm-hmm.
Green is in the 500, and then ultraviolet's in the 400 region.
Mm-hmm.
And blue is in the between the 400 and 500.
Right.
So now, with that said, what are you expecting? Well, you're going to get a flamethrower, which is a very interesting device.
Yeah, I've been taking, for anybody who wants to know, I've been discussing energy work with Fred for the past 12 years, and I'm capable of taking energy out through the body, and he's come up with a device that I'm going to be using that's black, and I can actually put it by the feet and draw negative energy out through the body with this device, and I'm looking forward to it coming in the mail. So what I'm going to do is I usually see things very clear and energy very clear, and so I'll be thrilled with it, be able to tell Fred what I'm seeing as it's pulling this energy out of the body. So that ought to be coming in Monday, and I suspect that I'll be able to talk about it on my show next Saturday. And
I think next weekend, but not mistaken, I think we're going to have Sean Ray on Bambi.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the guy from Saudi Arabia that's over here doing all kinds of neat things. And of course, he's doing all kinds of things in the, Pakistan and in Afghanistan and all these countries that are depressed, filming and doing missionary projects.
Right.
He's a very famous musician, and he's also the prince of a very large tribe of people. So, so probably he'll be on. Just
wonderful.
Firming up the date. It looks like he'll be on. But then the following week, I think maybe we'll have you back, because we need to get you back right away to discuss what the black... The flamethrowers come in four colors.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people that are high-level sensitive that do amazing developmental work for themselves, for other people, for companies, for the government, or whatever. And a lot of times they get a lot of negative interruptions from the government or aliens, a lot of times from aliens, extraterrestrial influence. And then, of course, rogue agencies, too. So a long time ago, we developed a system with the help of the Pleiadians where we have four devices. They're about a half the size or a quarter the size of a fire star, pointing in four directions. So we have a red one that goes towards the north, we get a black one that goes towards the south, a green one that goes towards the east, and a blue one that goes towards the west, or you can switch the blue and the green one back and forth, but the red and black ones are always pointed towards the south. Well, a lot of people will start out with the first one to get a feel for them, because they're not exactly inexpensive. And so what will happen is, they'll start off with the black one. The black one is an extractor. It destroys the worst of negative energy possible. So a lot of chiropractors and practitioners use the black one because you can not only hang it and get rid of energy coming from whatever direction you point it, it's negative, but you can also use it on people, which is really neat to get the negative energy out of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to use that.
Yeah.
Be a lot of fun to see.
What's the latest thing with projectors this week?
Excuse me?
What's the latest projector information?
Well, I'm actually looking at the projectors in my other room, and there's a tremendous... I keep on getting these balls of light in the center of the room, but the amazing part of it is, Fred, is today, actually yesterday also, I saw a round sphere of light, almost the shape of a flying saucer. And that's been in the room since yesterday, and it's about 4 feet, 4 feet in diameter, and it's been in there ever since yesterday.
Wow.
And so I'm not sure what it is, Fred. I know it's very good, but it's quite big. It's about 4 feet around, and it looks like a flying saucer. But whether it is or not, I'm not sure, but... the light that's coming from it, or the light that's emitting from this thing in my room, is gigantic, and people are feeling it as they walk in the room.
Are you getting any peripheral radiation from it?
No. Actually, what people are finding out, they're actually seeing colors brighter.
They're seeing what now?
Colors. In other words, their vision, the colors, the greens are greener and the flowers are prettier. And so whatever is happening in that room, it's quite magnificent. And I've been able to do that myself, but with the help of the projectors, it's even more. Now, the projectors keep growing, and I'm finding out, Fred, something very interesting. For everybody to hear this, it's very interesting. You actually become the projectors.
Do what now?
You actually become the projector, and the projector becomes you.
Yeah, it's because it's part of the hologram.
Yeah. And it's you even walk around during the day, even out of the room, I feel the projector working. And the energy that it puts out is tremendous. I remember 8 of 08, at 8 o'clock in the morning, a lot of people were meditating to help the planet. And the apex of that time was 11 o'clock in the morning. And I was absolutely startled by the energy that was protruding from the projectors. The whole room was just like a ball of pure white light.
You see more in the morning than you do during the rest of the day, or
not? No, it was just that day, Fred. But I see it a lot. I see energy a lot in that room. You know, I told you, we had mentioned that the center of the projector itself has got a ball of light about 4 feet, and each of the pyramids has light emitting from it. So you have light emitting from the projector itself and on the pyramids, and then you have this ball of light right in the center of the pyramid, in center of the projector, and then there's a ball of light in the center of the room, and it's very stable. It's not; it doesn't move. It's very, very stable. And this other light, which is over my headrest, which is up about maybe 7 feet, maybe 6.5 feet, is just tremendous light, and I'm actually seeing it right through the wall.
So you're starting to develop a vision where you can see through things, like a superpower.
Yes. Yes.
How do you like that?
It's wonderful.
How about some of your people that use these things? Are they developing anything yet?
Yeah, I'm having a lot more. A lot of people are seeing a lot more color. As I'm working with the projectors in the room, they're becoming a lot more sensitive to light in terms of being able to see more light, being able to see more violet. Being able to see colors that are very, very clear and very crisp and clean.
Yeah.
Their minds are very, very... When they leave that room, Fred, their minds are dead on focus.
So basically, before other people can develop their super physical senses, they have to go through this giant healing process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I tell them that, too.
Yeah.
I tell them that. The amazing part about it... is that when I work with people, instead of them detoxifying like crazy, they're already detoxified before they leave the room. I don't know how that happens, Fred, but nobody's coming back and saying, oh, I sweat, I was crying, I was this, I was that. Everybody that leaves the room after we work on them with the projectors and the receptors and the projector that I wear around my neck, they're clear, Fred. There's no detoxification. The detoxification happens instantaneously in my room. I don't know why, but people are leaving there, and they feel 100% better.
Well, that's good. Are they wearing receptors, too?
I have a couple of them that do. Most of them don't, but I'm going to talk them into them as much as I possibly can. But you know how busy I am. I'm doing 30 people a week, and it's, you know, I'm doing 5-6 people a day, and I'm doing one right after another. So, plus I'm getting phone calls, you know, from people from you and myself. So it's I've just been busy like crazy.
Yeah. So what happened? Are you relocated now?
Yeah. I got an office because I think it's a lot better in an office than it is at home.
Yeah. So do you have to? Where'd you get your office at?
It's about 3 miles from my home, and it's a lot easier for me to work. And I'm already setting up, actually, there is a vortex in the room there that's 5 miles high and 6 miles wide already.
Cool.
So it's really, I'll tell you, there's such a vibration in my room. If I touch somebody, Fred, they feel it. I mean, it's a vibration that comes through me, from the projectors, from everything in the room. And the amazing part about it is that when I really get going with all this energy in there, and, you know, the big thing is the crystal. The crystal is amazing. You had a fight with me to give me a damn crystal.
I know, and we've been selling those master crystals like crazy. I've sold two in the last week.
They're unbelievable. They're absolutely unbelievable. I've had people feel the heat from the crystal right through their gut, through their heart, wherever it has to go, and I see this, the tip of the master crystal turn red, just pure red, and they can feel the heat of this crystal going right through them.
Yeah, like no, it does. And my master crystal supply is getting diminished now. I'm having to really scrounge around to get.
Well, I'm thinking about getting another one from you.
You better hurry up. I sold a little 40-pounder 2 days ago. It was a beautiful piece. And I've got one down in Arkansas sort of store that I'm going to get. It's going to be a little pricey.
Yeah, well, this
one I'm having to really scrounge through all our warehouses to get things, you know, to get the really nice ones. I've got some junky ones, but I don't have them here, you know. That's what we're going to be selling eventually. I'd say in another year we're going to be down to junkers.
Yeah, well, I don't want to do that. I want to get something really pure. I'm thinking, well, I just bought this unit from you, so I think in another month or two I'll be able to buy the crystal again. I was set to go buy a computer.
By the way, did you buy one yet?
You've been after me to buy one for a year, and I finally got enough money, and then you said, no, you got to get this device, it'll really work. So I put my computer on hold right now.
That's funny.
But, you know, I love your stuff, and it really works. And, you know, when I use it, it works. I mean, I just play with them, and it'll work even... I can't wait for it to get here so I can experiment with them. I'm like a little kid with a toy when it gets here.
Oh, this is a major toy coming
your
way.
Yeah.
You know, we've mentioned the stories on the show that's in the archives of how it was discovered and how the Pleiadians worked with us and the witnesses who saw what it did against the Greys. I mean, it's an amazing piece. It's got a pretty glorified history, that's for sure.
Right. Let me see, the generator that I bought from you, or the generator that I got from you. I ring that thing, Fred, and
the hydrogen generator.
Yes,
yeah.
The hydrogen generator. I ring that about five or six times. The room fills up with ETs.
Wow.
I mean to tell you, it fills up. They look like us, but the room is filled, Fred. There's no room for anybody to stand in there.
Wow.
It just fills up. It's just absolutely amazing. So a lot of times my clients will just, they love it so much that the first thing they do when they walk in the room is to ring the generator.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to get is a CD. I'm slowly but surely putting my lab together so I can make a nice recording of it along with some other stuff so the people that have these systems can hear it. They can't afford to actually buy one. We'll have the best thing for it. And matter of fact, I'm going to, I've got this other recorder coming. I just ordered it 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where I might be able to use it by itself, at least to get a solo hydrogen generator CD produced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without anything but that. You know, I need my studio to do what I want to do, but
yes.
I mean, I'm sure if we offer something like that for $20, a lot cheaper than spending, you know, $1,500 on one.
Right. I know that I had a CD here.
Yeah.
And I heard it again at your house, at your show. It had a Palladian ship on it.
Yeah.
And my goodness gracious, I get grounded right away when I hear that ship. Things start clearing. It's just absolutely amazing to hear that, and
I'm thinking I could put the Pleiadian ship along with the hydrogen chime.
Oh man!
And maybe a little flute or something. I have to figure it out once I start playing around with it in the studio.
Yeah,
I want to do something real simple to get the thing started. Then I'll do a more complicated, sophisticated 5.0 surround sound thing later on. You know.
Well, I'll tell you when I was at your house and you put on that Pleiadian music. That was incredible, Fred. I mean, I actually felt stuff leaving me. And I think I might have mentioned that to you a couple times, but I felt much better when I left.
Yeah, are you talking about up the light show that we...
Yeah.
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 Yeah, because you can hear it in a reel.
Oh, Fred, it was unbelievable. And I had the tape here, which I think my wife ended up taking with her, so I ordered it again.
It's Atlantis Rising.
And is that what it is, Atlantis Rising?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Fred, when I would play that in a room, my goodness gracious, I mean, things would clear like crazy. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that particular album is real interesting. We have a thing out here called Power 106 Radio,
mm-hmm.
which is a 50,000-watt station in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's the most powerful radio station in Southern California. And they play hard, you know, medium to hard rock on it sometimes, but it's Power 106. They play powerful stuff. They played 15 minutes of Atlantis Rising one day on it,
mm-hmm.
and everybody in Southern California called and tried to order it. They didn't know where the hell this music came from.
Yeah.
It's got 14 different radio stations called, wanting
really?
To know where they could get it so they could play it.
Yeah, it's amazing, Fred. The sound of the ship alone is very, very healing.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, you told me that a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago, and I saw it for myself and felt it for myself. It was absolutely amazing. But the chime that I'm using now, the healer, it's just absolutely amazing. I mean, people are playing that as soon as they walk in the room.
Yeah, it takes time to get used to all this stuff. We got so many things that we do now that. Get them all together, combining them all together is great, but it takes people, I always tell people to start with one thing or two things that, obviously a star orb or something.
Right.
And then work up from there, and it may be a receptor or a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then gradually keep adding until you start having a whole, synergism of different kinds of things to work with.
Yeah.
That way you get the individual effect of each item.
Right.
That's what we've been doing for years.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting.
You.
I started out with the nuclear receptor, and I've grown after about 10 or 12 years with this stuff, and it's just, I wouldn't want to be without it now.
Yeah.
You know, it really does work.
It would scare me not to be having one,
Yeah.
I've had this stuff now since we started the company, and the funny thing is the company started because I was making these products for a doctor down here.
Uh-huh.
Finally, I decided to make them for myself. I didn't even start making them for me. And I was working in his clinic, and I began to realize what he had me making, and I began to discover what these things did.
Uh-huh.
I sort of invented the stuff. He told me what he needed to do, and I sort of figured out how it could be done. That's how the stuff started off.
Right, right, right.
And then when we got up to the Pleiadian stuff, then the Semyasi, of course, gave us the design of the receptor, but also Pat Flanagan had worked on it with me anyway to sort it out a little bit, too.
Uh-huh.
So his input was very valuable years ago in 81.
Yeah, it's really amazing. When we sold yours in New York City, did you end up putting another one together for yourself?
What, a receptor?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You did.
Matter of
okay.
fact, let's see what I do. Yeah, I sold that. Yeah, I sold that one. Yeah, I've got another one. I got it on right now, actually.
Right,
here.
Cool.
You have your computer on, you can see it.
I have a computer, but it doesn't have a camera. But I'm going to do? I think I'm going to get a computer.
Watch what I'm doing,
I think.
BBSradio.com and go to the front page. On the index page, you'll see the show.
Yes.
We do television simultaneous as radio now.
Oh, cool.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, you've seen the front page of BBS Radio, right?
Yes.
Okay, if you were there right now, you'd see me, and I got my other sidekick, a bird, here on my shoulder.
Okay.
And we're just blasting away.
Cool.
Yeah, so we do.
Cool. That'll be great. I think I'm going to get a new computer next week. So by the time I get on your show in 2 weeks, I'll be able to see you.
Yeah, you better move fast because Dell was the last one making the old program. The Vista is going to be on the new one. And the XP is the one that works. I have Vista. I even getting my show started tonight with Vista. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It screwed up. I had to have my computer guy earlier this afternoon fix a couple things on it.
Okay.
It has a tendency to lose programs. Like I had Google Earth on here. It just went away. walked out of the, you know, program guide all by himself, which computers aren't supposed, not supposed to do that. I had to reinstall it again, so when it walked away from me, I lost all my individual program features, you know, little locations. I had a, in New Zealand or Australia, near Brisbane, I had a picture of a flying triangle taken from the Google satellite.
Okay.
You know? And
yeah.
It was about, I don't know, 75 or 100 feet across. It's a big one.
Right.
And
right.
It was flying, and I had that all mapped out. Now that's gone. I'll grab the coordinates, but, I mean, it was all set up.
Right.
So, anyhow, we're running out of time. We got about a minute left, actually.
Okay, buddy.
Believe that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
So tell people about your show, and then we got to check out.
Yeah, Steve Barish Healing Hour will be on at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, Eastern Standard Time, 3 o'clock Pacific Time, and we should have a lot of fun tomorrow.
All right, you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show from Laguna Beach, California, combined with a TV show, which we now do. And we do have fun here.
It's a TV show.
And we're now checking out. I can hear myself repeating myself in the background. That's pretty good. So anyhow, you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. Saturday night, we'll have the Can Show. And until then, have a great old time.